Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of March 26, 2019. We look at the Post and Courier's Above the Law investigation into questionable conduct by several sheriffs across South Carolina over the past few years, their extravagant spending, criminal charges against some of them, and questions about who is overseeing these officials sworn to uphold the law. And again, we have our Florence live taping coming this week. We will be in Florence, South Carolina on Thursday, March 28th at Seminar Brewing. Come out and have a pint with us and enjoy some great discussion with the Post and Courier's Jamie Lovegrove and the Associated Press's Meg Kennard. Also, we'll have some great trivia, swag, and giveaways. So Florence Seminar Brewing, March 28th. Brewery opens at 4 p.m. and we get going at 6:30 p.m. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who write the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections of the podcast instead of wondering about Barbara Streisand's questionable remarks defending Michael Jackson. Oh, Babs, oh, honey, oh, why? Or complaining about your busted bracket. No one cares you had Marquette going all the way. Everyone's bracket gets busted, Buster. Now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories that you should know about. Number one, boondoggle update. The state newspaper reports that a bill filed Thursday by six top House members, including House Speaker Jay Lucas, would empower a committee of lawmakers to investigate four offers to purchase Santee Cooper and to bring the best one back to the General Assembly for a vote. Senate President Harvey Peeler's proposal, meanwhile, would effectively decide that Santee Cooper should be sold and authorizes Governor Henry McMaster to negotiate and execute the deal. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Hugh Leatherman said Thursday that Peeler's proposal would get an up or down vote in his committee this week. 2 million South Carolinians rely on the Monk's Corner-based Utilities Power, which racked up $4 billion in debt before pulling out of the V.C. Summer nuclear plant construction project in Fairfield County. Number two, the Post and Courier reports that the Public Service Commission began hearings on March 21st over Duke Energy's proposed increases to the basic facility charge. The monthly bill for Duke Energy Carolina's customers could increase by more than $14 per month and $17 per month for Duke Energy Progress customers. The Public Service Commission held public hearings in recent weeks about the current rate hike proposals, which are lower than originally requested. Duke said it needs to recover money for cleaning up coal ash, converting coal plants to natural gas, solar farms, the relicensing of some hydroelectric dams, and to recover costs on the Lee Nuclear Station in Gaffney that Duke canceled 2 years ago. You can watch the Public Service Commission's meetings live on scetv.org. Number three, the Associated Press reports that a proposal to change South Carolina labor laws to attract the Carolina Panthers to move their practice facility and headquarters across the North Carolina state line continues its quick journey through the legislature. Budget writing committees in both the House and Senate passed the bill March 20th, which allows the state to classify football players, coaches, and other team officials as full-time employees so the team can get tax credits and other incentives. There was some opposition among senators who questioned whether moving the facility would help the whole state or just Rock Hill. And number four, a recent Winthrop poll finds that 80% of those surveyed said that they would support legislation that would require a completed background check before a person is sold a gun. Currently, when a person buys a firearm, if the background check takes longer than 3 days, the buyer can receive the gun at the seller's discretion. This is known as the Charleston loophole, named after shooter Dylan Roof, was able to obtain a gun under similar circumstances. Also, Winthrop found that a majority of South Carolinians said they favor at least some restrictions on abortions. But strong majorities believe that some circumstances, such as the health of the mother, the viability of the fetus, or rape and incest, do warrant legal abortions, effectively dealing a blow to any personhood bill that would treat a fertilized egg as a person. And just like your car buried upon layer upon layer upon layer of pollen, we buried the lead! Please give us rain! Hey y'all, so for this week's discussion, we did what they call in the biz a tape sync. Yeah, that's biz speak, that's lingo, baby girl, baby, that's jargon, cool daddy, yeah. Now, we weren't able to get down to Charleston to sit down with reporter Tony Bartlemy, so we called him up in Columbia, spoke with him, and had him tape his responses on mic in Charleston. AT, our producer, then mashed his responses with my questions together, and we have the following discussion. A revealing report from the Post and Courier looks at several South Carolina sheriffs who have acted above the law, the title of the in-depth project published on March 16th. Reporters Tony Bartlemy and Joe Cranny sifted through more than 5,000 pages of bank statements, receipts, lawsuits, campaign filings, and IRS records. They interviewed former and current deputies and criminal justice experts. What they found is that no fewer than 11 of South Carolina's 46 counties have seen their sheriffs accused of breaking the law they were sworn to uphold. Meanwhile, others continue to faithfully serve and protect the county citizens that elected them. Joining me to discuss this is the Post and Courier's Tony Bartlemy. Thanks for making time, Tony.
Nice to be with you, Gavin.
Tony, there was a lot of reporting in that big project that you and Joe put together. But what's some of the biggest takeaways that you all found in sifting through all those documents and all those FOIA requests when you look at these sheriffs? What are some of the biggest things that you guys thought might need to be fixed going forward?
Well, some of the biggest takeaways, one is that when you look at the whole corruption spectrum, it's surprisingly widespread. One in four counties have seen their sheriffs accused of breaking laws they were sworn to uphold. And that was stunning to us. And then, secondly, it's really difficult to find out what's going on in these sheriff's departments. They make it difficult to find out what counts are being used, how they spend money. So that's one of the big things that could be improved is transparency.
And one of the sheriffs you were looking at, one of these big trips, a lot of spending with the tax dollars was $11,200 trip to Reno for Chester County Sheriff Alex Underwood, his deputy, and their wives, whom they paid for, but they later reimbursed the department just before the Post and Courier came calling. Is that something that, I mean, where does that kind of fall under in terms of whether they're allowed to mix purchases like that, spend that kind of money when it's something like that, when it's a trip, for example? It seems like a lot of gray area that they were using to justify that spending.
Yeah, it's a huge gray area, Gavin. Remember, Mark Sanford was tagged for spending money on first class and business class flights to Argentina. And here we have Alex Underwood, the sheriff of Chester County, spending thousands and thousands of dollars to fly first class to various sheriff's conferences. That money came from drug forfeiture funds and other sources. And it's unclear whether or not county sheriffs are bound by the same rules that state employees are.
And what's it going to take for them to get that clarification? I know some lawmakers have talked about, you know, more responsibility, more oversight when it comes to ethical issues, but it doesn't sound like anyone's pushing anything forward other than maybe lip service about what should be done to keep an eye on these things or to get clarification when it comes to procurement.
Yeah, sheriffs exist in this gray area of accountability. They're county elected officials, of course, but they're also, you know, they derive their authority from the state constitution. So they're bound by lots of sort of their own rules in a lot of ways. So what's it going to take is a, you know, huge question. They derive their authority from the state constitution, which means major changes involve a change in the state constitution. But that being said, there are other possibilities. Some have suggested that the state could have their inspector general do regular audits of these various sheriff's departments. And that, you know, may or may not require a change in the state constitution.
But until anything like that happens, these sheriffs can still spend the way they do. I mean, you point out that Underwood, again, angered council members because he bypassed procurement rules to buy a $70,000 SUV. It doesn't sound like there's any kind of fallout for things like that. And at least up there, I mean, people aren't either really paying attention or they don't seem to even to worry or care about the sheriffs doing some of this activity as well. And a lot of this activity only came to light because of the reporting from you and other journalists looking at these questionable spending practices. But otherwise, I mean, the only big check on sheriffs in a county is the electorate. But if they don't know this is happening, then they can operate in somewhat of a bubble, it seems like.
Yeah, there's really a blind spot, especially in rural areas where watchdogs aren't as active, perhaps, in news deserts that, you know, there's just less accountability. And watchdogs take on a really difficult role when they take a look at sheriffs. I mean, these sheriffs often are among the most powerful people in the counties. You know, I was amazed at the climate of fear that was in place in some of these rural counties. People were afraid to talk. I was within 2 hours of arriving in one particular county, I was warned twice to be careful myself.
Like legitimate worries, or like do you think that they're that's just what they always say to people, or stop poking around too much?
Yeah, they're I didn't take it particularly seriously. However, they were serious. They are very concerned about themselves and being harassed, and they've seen other people locked up for questionable reasons or harassed or stopped, and it's just scary to be vulnerable to that kind of harassment.
Yeah, I mean, even you talk about how you know, these employees serve at the pleasure of the sheriffs, and that can sometimes come back around and bite them for retribution purposes. You know, I worked in Florence County, and you do mention Sheriff Kenny Boone, Florence County Sheriff Kenny Boone in there. And, you know, I had always heard stories about retribution being in place for people who were maybe didn't vote for him or didn't put a sticker on their car that worked for him, you know, like the reelection for the sheriff. I mean, you hear things like that level of matters can affect how you're viewed within a department. And when you don't, you know, you can get fired for any reason in South Carolina. It's clear that, you know, you can have a type of, I don't want to say tyrannical rule because I don't know exactly what that's like in there, but you can rule with impunity, it sounds like. And then there's a mention of Kevin Yoakum, the county finance director in Florence County, who did try and question some spending by Sheriff Kenny Boone and was blasted by the sheriff. And you quote the voicemails and the threatening voicemails and how Boone sent a deputy to Yoakum's house to find him, to talk to him. I mean, this is interesting, you know, that it happens, you know, in the bigger counties and the smaller counties alike, that people seem that they can just kind of govern the way that they want to govern and no one can really do much to stop them.
Yeah, that Kenny Boone incident was a classic case of abuse of power. Here's a county official basically just saying, hey, Kenny, I need to know why you're doing this. Why are you spending extra money on an extra room for someone who actually doesn't work for the sheriff's department anymore? And Kenny Boone flies off the handle and makes very, very, very threatening comments about sending a deputy to go find him and that there'll be hell to pay. So that coming from a sheriff who has access to all sorts of investigative tools, has access to deputies who carry guns, that's a little different than, say, the county treasurer saying, hey, I'm going to send my secretary over to get you to return my phone call.
And in some of these sheriffs also, you know, they don't really necessarily report as much as you would think they should report with economic interest disclosures. You guys had a little separate sidebar about gifts that they received, whereas some sheriffs are meticulous about reporting every little thing that they get, from small little Valentine's Day gifts, I think, to big coolers and such. What does that indicate, I guess, maybe that some of these guys are reporting these gifts, others maybe not so much? I mean, because there are sheriffs out there that you guys do mention that, you know, are following the law, they are following the letter of the law that they're sworn to uphold. But when you look at these smaller gifts as an example, I mean, is that indicative of something that maybe a culture of what to do and what not to do when it comes to transparency?
Yeah, that's a great question, Gavin. We found a couple of sheriffs who were really meticulous about identifying gifts that they received, down to like a $5 Valentine's Day card. Really, really minor things. They were trying to do the right thing. What that showed, however, was that so these guys were getting lots of swag. You know, they're getting lots of gifts. People are trying to say thank you, or they're trying to influence, right? Or they would win door prizes at various conferences. Now, a lot of the other sheriffs, meantime, their disclosure forms are empty. Like Alex Underwood in Chester County, for instance, he supposedly won a free trip to New Orleans, including hotels. That's a pretty valuable gift. Nowhere to be found.
So then, I know we were talking about oversight and watchdogs, but I mean, other than, you know, you're reporting and I guess things coming to light, are there any other people in the state that are really trying to push for oversight or for some of this to come to light? I mean, there are concerned citizens that maybe you came across that are trying to keep the pressure on their sheriffs?
It's very scattered and very local. So there are actually a couple of people in Chester County, for instance, who are questioning the sheriff on various things. And the sheriff tends to write that off as being political, which it may be, and he'll often talk about race. And, you know, there may be some of that, too. But there's no statewide push, really. I know there's interest in some lawmakers. We're hearing about some interest to find some way to be more transparent. It's a little difficult at this point to introduce legislation, so we'll see what happens on the legislative front.
And what prompted the reporting from you and Joe Craney, who we couldn't get Joe in studio today, but obviously there's a lot out there. There's been a lot of reporting over the years, but what kind of prompted you all to get all this maybe in one place and put together like this?
Well, it began with Dan Johnson, the prosecutor in Richland County. We began looking at his spending records after we got a tip, and then we found, you know, incredible abuses. You know, stuff flying. You know, he was flying to the Galapagos Islands, and you know, secretaries flying out of state to get dental work. It was egregious, and we thought, wow, okay, what are the other islands of inaccountability out there? And sheriffs really were part of that discussion, because also Dan Johnson got his, you know, one of his previous jobs was in the sheriff's department in Richland. So we decided, you know, we'll take a look at all these sheriffs, because we've also, there were a lot of previous cases too that we, you know, that were out there. So we wanted to kind of take a wide-ranging look at places that don't normally see that kind of scrutiny.
So could this lead to similar outcomes as we saw with the Dan Johnson reporting, with him you know, pleading guilty and getting indicted?
Well, it's hard to say. Alex Underwood will tell you that he didn't do anything wrong, that, you know, when he upgraded his room to a larger bed, or a king-size bed, he said he had to do that because he's 6'4", and he didn't want his feet to dangle off the mattress. You know? He said he had to fly first class because he's 6'4", and needs extra room. Those are explanations, whether they're legal or not. You know, I guess we'll see.
And it seems like some other departments have some, you know, questionable spending. I mean, you look at Sheriff Leon Lott here in Richland County. I mean, paying for, you know, a large number costs for lunches with coworkers that are reported to be morale building and for camaraderie, and just other charges for different events and registration fees for triathlons and running races and a bid to be team building and camaraderie. I mean, is that what taxpayers are paying for when we send our tax dollars to sheriff's offices to pay for their lunches? Or are we supposed to be paying for them just to uphold the laws of the land? It seems kind of questionable. It seems like a lot of gray area, like we talked about. What exactly is this? How are they getting away with these kind of payments? And does that mean other state agencies should be doing the same? Are they getting carte blanche there at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, would it be appropriate for other agencies to spend thousands and thousands of dollars taking their employees out to talk to them and find out what's on their mind? And is that legitimate? So that's a little bit of a gray area, right? You know, it's, in some ways, it's could be said that it's building morale, you know, taking everybody out to steakhouse dinners every week or two. And on the other hand, is that buying loyalty?
Which, again, just kind of creates a cycle there that, you know, you keep everyone happy, everyone keeps getting a little piece of something, then you kind of keep your little closed circle of trust going, I suppose, is what you could say it could be interpreted as.
We found that, you know, that was fairly frequent. We found that the sheriffs like to go out to, some of the sheriffs like to go out to lunch and dinner and take a mayor out to dinner and on the taxpayer's dime, and, you know, things like that. Or kind of blur the line between what's an appropriate business expense and what's just influence peddling.
Mm-hmm. And then we also saw some more activity going on with that, the Greenville County Sheriff's case with Will Lewis, the now suspended sheriff out there. They actually just had some more charges come out with him. He's now facing 14 charges with 4 criminal indictments, charges of misconduct in office, obstruction of justice, and misconduct of a public officer. And he was also previously charged with perjury. He has been suspended by the governor, and that's kind of really one of the only ways that you can be suspended or really held accountable is by the governor. But again, that's only temporary, because it's not a permanent solution, I guess, pending, you know, the outcome of these indictments and where this stands with him.
Yeah, the Will Lewis case up in Greenville is fascinating because it involves lots of different things, everything from obstruction of justice charges to, a nasty affair, which really was sort of the impetus for the whole thing, was, you know, this affair that took place, and then the woman who was involved tape recorded bunches of a lot of conversations, which also gave you an insight into how some sheriffs view these conferences, because they planned a big tryst in Reno, where a lot of the sheriffs go for the National Sheriff's Conference. And he looked at it, you know, you could hear him on the voice recording talking about how, oh yeah, I'd really love to go out there and hang out with you and drink on the company time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very revealing.
Yeah, and there's just so many, I know it's just a small part because it's a bigger story too, but I know the Greenville News has really gotten a lot into it too, just about all the the indictments up there and his ability to one of them was his authority to oppress and intimidate sheriff's office employees, to deal with their careers, to oppress potential career advancement within the agency. So again, kind of going back to what we're talking about, how it can go one way or the other depending on loyalty amongst just employees within the ranks too. But and you guys did speak with the Sheriff's Association as well about some of these situations. And what was their reaction to some of the questions that you guys brought up?
Well, the reaction was, at least on the South Carolina level, was that, hey, there's bad apples everywhere. We shouldn't punish the good ones for the bad deeds that just a few do. But then I would also argue, it's not just a few. You know, one out of four counties have seen their sheriffs busted.
I mean, I know you guys look at historical, but I mean, in terms of looking at the historical trend, is it becoming more frequent or is it about the same, or this is just kind of what we know, or any highlights there in terms of historical data?
That's difficult to peg in terms of patterns because it's hard to say how much was going on before because maybe we just didn't know about it or we weren't looking that hard or back 20 or 30 years ago. I gotta hope that it's a little better just because there is a little more transparency than there used to be. And I don't know. I like to be an optimist in that regard, at least.
And just kind of wrapping up, Tony, has there been any fallout? Have you got any reaction from the project that you guys worked on there?
We got a huge reaction from readers, a huge reaction in some rural areas where people were very grateful that some scrutiny was taking place because they'd felt like they weren't being heard. So for us, that's a good day's work. We're also hearing some talk among legislators about the need to do something, especially in light of the Greenville News did a great job on that asset forfeiture project. And our two projects are pretty complementary in that regard because both have an underlying theme about the abuse of power.
Yeah, I was going to mention, I was in a House Judiciary Committee meeting last week, and there was a lot of mention of both the projects that the Greenville News did with the take-in, with the asset forfeiture, and then, of course, the Post and Courier's Above the Law series that you all worked on. Just saying, like, how important it was to highlight all this data, especially for them. You know, it's a little bit more difficult for them to get all that data, too, just for FOIA purposes because it's so scattered. But again, you guys had to go through, thousands and thousands of documents, too, to sift through, to find out where this spending was happening and determine where that money was actually going. And, you know, again, the average person, even the average newspaper out in rural South Carolina, they just don't have that ability to keep an eye on these elected officials like you all do.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of time to get it. And some sheriff's departments, like the Richland County Sheriff, made us pay a giant FOIA bill. We asked them to lower it, but we paid a big chunk of change for it and ended up getting copies of their electric bills, hundreds and hundreds of pages of their electric bills.
Hmm.
So they play games. Everybody, you know, some sheriff's departments were amazing. They just gave us documents and without charging. Others, not so good.
So did you go to all sheriff's offices in the state then?
We made inquiries to all of them and received documents from most. Some sheriff's departments were just so small that we just had to focus on some of the more egregious cases. So, we looked at all the counties.
But for the most part,
some harder than others.
Yeah, I was gonna say the bigger counties obviously you always indicate a little bit more scrutiny. But then of course smaller ones maybe as well too because they're not getting as much as well. So definitely a lot to look at there. But Tony, thank you so much for your reporting, and thanks to Joe Craney who couldn't be here with us today as well for working on that project Above the Law, which you can read at thepostandcourier.com. Thanks, Tony.
You bet. Great to be there.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. We're starting off with a Palmetto foursome. The Hill newspaper reported Sunday that President Donald Trump was golfing with Senator Lindsey Graham, Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, and former 4th Congressional District Representative Trey Gowdy. Trump spent the weekend at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida, and golfed Sunday at Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach. The round of golf came as lawmakers in Congress received a summary of Robert Mueller's findings from his investigation into the Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election and possible coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia, which it did not find. And also remember reports last week that Mulvaney, the former 5th Congressional District Rep, is closer to having acting removed from his title and becoming the permanent chief of staff. Mulvaney is also director of the Office of Management and Budget. Democratic presidential candidate New Jersey Senator Cory Booker will participate in a CNN town hall on Wednesday, March 27th, broadcast live from the Stevenson Auditorium in Orangeburg at 10 p.m. The state Democratic Party is handling event registration, and CNN is issuing tickets. And some additional Winthrop poll findings. We got some approval numbers for you.
Hooray!
Senator Tim Scott has a 55% approval rating in the state. Governor McMaster has a 52% approval rating in the state. Graham, who faces re-election next year, has 49% overall, but 74% among Republicans. Donald Trump's approval rating in South Carolina is 42%. The poll found that the top problems facing our country is immigration, followed by politicians and government, Donald Trump, and racism. Those surveyed also said that the most important issues facing the Palmetto State are education, roads, bridges, and infrastructure, jobs or unemployment, and racism. The poll surveyed 1,007 residents of South Carolina between late February and early March, with a margin of error of 3.1%. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back with some more great state trivia? He is. I got two in a row so far. I don't know if that's called a hot streak or what, but my bracket could get busted today. I think I'm saying that correctly. Russ, welcome back. What do we got?
Glad to be here. Well, you've had some conversation today concerning a recent article about sheriffs in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we heard kind of comments following that article around the statehouse a little bit about that sheriffs, in some people's opinions, are really kind of answerable to no one in their counties. That's not exactly true. They're answerable to the voters in their county because they are elected office holders. Mm-hmm. And while we generally think of the local sheriff as being a county official, the office of sheriff is actually created in the state constitution, not something, you know, in a specific county. And normally when we think of constitutional officers, we think of those officials who are elected statewide, stand on the statehouse steps every 4 years and take their oaths along with the governor and the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the state treasurer, secretary of state, et cetera. But the state's 46 sheriffs are also constitutional officers since they are created by the state constitution. So our question is, what other county office is also created in the state constitution?
Oh, geez. You've really got to get me. I got to start reading this. I mean, I have a working knowledge of the constitution, but.
Well, okay. This is pretty.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. The question again, what other county office, aside from treasurer, is also, aside from sheriff? Wait a minute. My question is, office is also created in the state constitution besides the sheriff, okay? A, coroner. B, solicitor. C, clerk of court. D, all of the above.
I was hoping treasurer was going to be there so I could be like, treasurer. I was like, oh, yes, good. Can you give those to me again really quick?
Sure.
And just for me.
Coroner, solicitor, clerk of court, all of the above.
Well, it's interesting reading the Above the Law project that the Post created that there were some instances where, you know, a sheriff would get kicked out back in the day and then they would put the coroner in charge. And the coroner is also elected too. So are solicitors, so are clerk of courts, which I almost want to say all the above for that kind of reasoning there. And, you know, whenever we get all the above, we always decide to go with all the above. So, since they're all elected officials.
Correct. And they are. Yes.
Yes. I don't want to discriminate in that sense. So I'm going to choose all of them.
All of them is correct.
Oh, my gosh. Three in a row. Oh, my God.
Sheriff, coroner, solicitor, clerk of court, all created in the state constitution, all according to the constitution, run for office every 4 years.
Which one would you want to be, Russ?
None of the above.
Thanks, Russ.
None of the above.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's Super Easy to Use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at SCLeadPod. You can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at SCLEDEPOD. We have swag, sticker swag that is, so send us a direct message on Twitter or on Instagram with your address and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on March 25th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Cowboy Curtis and Morpheus are the same person.
Layer upon 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 layer.